A reading from Matthew chapter 5, verses 33 to 37, concerning oaths. Again, you have heard that it was said to those of ancient times, "You shall not swear falsely, but carry out the vows you have made to the Lord." But I say to you, do not swear at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by the earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great King. And do not swear by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. Let your word be yes, yes, or no, no. Anything more than this comes from the evil one. The word of the Lord. Now, there are two main things that come to this from that come to me from this reading. One is we need to be wholehearted and positive when we make our commitment yes or no and stick to it, see it through. Many of us have made a commitment for life to be disciples, follow Jesus, and we need to stick to it. We need to know clearly what we're on about and stick to it and pick up again when we fall a bit short. And as Jesus says, there's no need for swearing on anything, making oaths unnecessarily. It seems to have been the custom in Jesus' time that's what people did. And you implied the seriousness or the degree of your commitment to a promise, depending on how seriously you took your oath and made your promise. But this reading is part of the total chapter of Jesus, chapter 5, on discipleship. The chapter begins with the Beatitudes and then about us being the salt and the light and the law of the prophets, which Jesus says he comes to fulfill. But then he goes on saying that there are parts of the words or passages taken in isolation have become extreme and need to be reassessed according to the positive teaching of Jesus. So each of these sections begins, "You have heard that it was said to those of ancient times," that was regarding anger. And then you heard that it was said, that was regarding adultery. It was said concerning divorce. And today's reading, again you have heard that it was said to those of ancient times. And so on for the next couple of passages, one regarding retaliation, one love for enemies. But as Jesus is giving us a positive approach to discipleship. And if we are following Jesus in discipleship, it's that initial part of the chapter, the Beatitudes, that we need to focus on and keep to the forefront of our thinking. And we need to be positive as to where this fits into our lives and say, yes, yes, today again, I'm onto this line of thinking, or this line of working, or this line of attitude that we espoused, A, with our baptism, B, with our confirmation, and C, with our life commitment. Now, the saint of today is Saint Basil the Great, and he's actually a very good example of living as a Christian, completely committed to this work of chapter 5, and the positive approach of chapter 5 of Matthew. Now, he had the advantage, I suppose, of being raised in a family with canonized saints in it, even though he was born way back approximately 330, quite a wee while ago. But it wasn't until he was 30 that he had this conversion of mind towards what the wonderful life of evangelical truth and action was all about. So he set off making a tour of monastic communities. I think the wealth of his family helped him in this regard, And then he spent 5 years in a monastery, stressing the importance of community. It's very hard on our own to stick to being positive to the discipleship of Jesus. We need the support of others and the example of others and the constant inspiration that others give us. So Basil then decided that monasteries should be places that carried out this work of Jesus in the Beatitudes. He believed they should be clearly integrated into the life of the church and society. And monasteries, rather than being in isolation, they should welcome guests. They should include orphanages and schools, should be the center of service and works of mercy. Sounds like convents of today, really, or at least in the recent past. And for Basil, the monastery did not exist for the sanctification of its members only, but for the good and welfare of the wider community. And the same thing happened. Basil was called to the priesthood and ultimately to the bishop, role of bishop in his time. So as a priest, he became famous for his preaching and the way he could clarify for people what the scriptures meant in their lives. But as a bishop, he was more emphasizing the social aspects of the gospel. During the time of famine, he organized soup kitchens, personally putting on the apron to wait on the hungry. He established a hospital for the poor who were sick, one of the wonders of the world of his day. And he constantly referred to the teaching of Jesus, who was so united to the precepts of love of God and neighbor that he refers to himself, the good deeds of which our neighbor is the object. For I was hungry, and you gave me to eat. Basil called all those he came in contact with for a greater redistribution of wealth as a demand of justice. He even went so far to say that the needs of the poor held a social mortgage on the superfluous holdings of the rich. And I think that aspect applies greatly in our world today, when there's such disparity between the wealthy and the poor, the wealthy countries and the poor countries, the small number of wealthy people who are billionaires and the large number who are living hand to mouth and even dying of hunger. This is the challenge of our reading today, that we say, yes, yes, we are for that message of the gospel that reaches out to those who are in need, and we say no, no to lapping up the luxuries that our world today can offer.